Welcome to the next episode of Digital Forensics Future. I am honored to have a guest on today. His name is Jonathan P. Rowe. He's probably going to be less of a guest and more of a co-host in the long run. What could be more futuristic for Digital Forensics Future than the topic of the metaverse? Do you want to intro yourself and your company?
Sure. I'm John Rowe, CEO, founder of Pinpoint Labs, and we're a software development company. We actually started off performing computer forensic service investigations. I spent many years in the field as a certified computer examiner, expert witness in trials and depositions. As we began to develop software for defensible e-discovery and forensic collections and investigations, that side of it pretty much took off over time, and I hung up my active forensic hat, but I've never really retired, I guess you would say, from investigating new technologies.
And you and I have such mutual interest in emerging technology and trying to predict the future and what's coming down the pike. And in a way, that's also suitable for business because we're trying to prepare ourselves for the next wave. I do have an employer. I'm not representing my employer today. I'm just acting independently, trying to create some thought leadership around new data sources and how to conquer them ultimately for the benefit of all forensic examiners, regardless of your employer. I hope that this will serve the community well, and it's going to take the community to figure this stuff out.
I'm hoping this brings a lot of people together, because something we definitely want to clarify up front is, and I think you would agree, that as we do these podcasts, we're not here to say, oh, we have all the answers and we're going to show you exactly everything that's going on. It's going to be educational because we have learned a lot and I believe we have a lot to share, but it's also inviting a dialogue, right? Inviting a conversation and bringing other professionals in and bring them into this series as well, because it's going to take, like other technologies in our industry. So as a foundation, we talk about the metaverse, and right now that's acting as an ultimate umbrella, right, for all these technologies and different things that we're going to be discussing. But when you get into the device side of it, or what people can most relate to, that's what's called extended reality, or XR, and augmented reality, virtual reality, and mixed reality all fit under that umbrella. So whether you're looking, you know, at an example like a Pokemon Go game that people played back in the day where they held up their phone and they walked around, that's augmented reality, right? Virtual reality is where you're submersive. You got an Oculus Quest on. If you've ever seen the movie like Ready Player One, it's completely immersive. It's everywhere around you. And then mixed reality, or MR, isn't really a device, it's a way that we interact with that data. So whether we're in an augmented reality environment or virtual reality, it's our ability to mix virtual objects with our physical bodies. So if I reach out and grab a basketball and I throw it in a virtual hoop, that's mixed reality, right? Because it's blending the two of those things together. It's blending the virtual objects. And that can happen in VR or essentially AR. Technically, as you played Pokemon Go and you walked closer and you could see it get closer, when you got close to a Pokemon, it vaporized, basically. It had to know the position of the phone, the GPS location, the angle. So that's, in a way, mixed reality, because again, what you're doing is affecting your environment.
It's really interesting to me psychologically what all of these different formats have on you. And part of that psychological effect is based on what you can mimic through the devices, whether that's a headset for your visual augmentation, or there's gloves that you can strap on nowadays, right, where it gives you tactile feedback. Right now, we're not conquering all the senses with the devices available, but the more senses you can influence, your brain starts to believe that other things are actually happening. So if you have your virtual reality glasses on and you're eating a bowl of ramen and you're hearing the sounds of the ramen slurping right into your mouth, you almost can tap into past experience and have the brain draw upon what the taste or the smell feels like without actually recreating that through any of the devices. I know that there are some drawbacks or some criticisms about VR. Can you help us touch on what some of those drawbacks might be where a more augmented or mixed reality format is conducive to consumers at large?
And I've enjoyed having these conversations with you because we came up with so many examples. But one of the biggest things people realize in VR is lack of situational awareness. It's, if you ever want to have some fun, go on YouTube and look up VR fails, and you watch people like running into walls and tripping over things. Because VR is so immersive, you just don't have an idea of where you are. Now, like in the Oculus Quest, if you're playing games, it'll say set up a guardian, which is basically the boundary around your room. And if you're jumping around interacting with the game and you get close to that boundary, it'll pop up in your view. But sometimes it's too late. If you're really getting into something, you're still going to go into the wall. It doesn't really matter. So right. VR has its advantages, but it's so immersive that you lose that situational awareness. Whereas augmented reality, they're glasses where you can still see everything around you. And it's projecting in your vision objects, right? Whether that's, again, a ball, I can throw it into a hoop, whether I'm a medical student or a doctor and I'm studying a 3D anatomical dummy. There's a lot. I'm an engineer. I'm designing a car. I can tweak it and see it in front of me. But that's projected in my space. That's projected where we are.
I think the AR and mixed reality makes sense because you do want to be within your real 3D space. You don't want to lose yourself in a total virtual environment, whereas gaming necessitates full immersion. You don't need any 3D real world references. Even if you're playing games, you just wear that headset for a short amount of time and you feel that's going to be the biggest drawback.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you talk about productivity. We can walk around with AR glasses. They're fairly light. And right now, several of them are actually driven off of powerful phones. So they're genuinely just the glasses sitting on your face. We've invested in a couple. They're called NREAL, N-R-E-A-L. And they were available in other countries for about the last 1.5, 2 years. But they started selling them in the U.S. a couple months ago. And myself and our head developer and my forensic partner back in the day, Jamie, got a pair. And so we've been working with those and seeing what kind of artifacts they leave behind, see how people are going to be using them. But they just look like sunglasses. They're fairly
That's
low
amazing.
Profile. And they're super cool. And so those actually are driven off of the newer Samsung phones.
Okay.
So the phone is the brain that's rendering everything. And the glasses are basically just the lenses and the projectors that are built into them.
And these are all going to improve over time. They're going to get smaller and more lightweight and convenient to carry around. The more that you can keep them on without feeling any pressure on your eyes, your nose, your ears, your head. I mean, for kind of that 24-hour metaverse experience where you're doing everything in the metaverse, the equipment's going to need to advance a long way before we get there.
Absolutely. There was an interesting article I saw last week. It was NASA holoported, they call it a holoportation, a doctor to the International Space Station. And
that's interesting.
Basically, they were using the HoloLens, right? So they had HoloLens glasses. So apparently, it's not all serious on the International Space Station. They give them things like HoloLens, which are the first augmented reality glasses on the scene several years ago. But they basically sent this doctor's image, right, into whoever's wearing the HoloLens. Now, it's just not for kicks. Those glasses have cameras on them. And one of the biggest uses of augmented reality is going to be instructional. If I'm working on my car and I need my dad's help because I'm doing the valve timing adjustment, I could throw my glasses on. He could see exactly what I'm looking at. And then he could even point in my field of view and go, no, here, whatever. So that's where AR is really cool too. It's you're interacting with people in completely different locations within your own space.
And in completely different ways, because when people think of the metaverse today, it's simulating the current reality. But to have a use case scenario like that, where you have an expert, a doctor in this instance, see through your eyes, see what you're seeing, that's pretty phenomenal. That's something you can't recreate in today's world, seeing it from your literal perspective to give you the appropriate instructions based on what they see in your position.
Now imagine there's a surgeon, one in the world, that specializes in a certain surgery and they can't get there, but you have a highly qualified person who's there that has a real good shot of performing that. The fact that they can be right there with you in your field of view. And of course, a lot of that is just learned over time. You just can't plug someone in because they're walking you through it. But there's a lot of situations where that could work, right? Where,
for sure.
Or just giving their expertise and say, you need to go, you need to take this approach instead, or don't do that, do it like this. But they're going to be right there with
you. I'm going to blow your mind for a second here, John.
Perfect.
Can you imagine a time where enough data is collected from enough of those interactions where the advice that you're getting through that headset or through whatever interface isn't a human, but instead AI? I consider artificial intelligence a part of the metaverse only because of the massive amounts of additional data points that you can collect through more real-time, full-time living in the metaverse, which is ultimately what this is going to influence. Look how much time we spend on social media through our phones on any given day. And that the time is pretty enormous. It varies from country to country, but some countries like South Korea, I think they're averaging like 5 hours a day on social media. Really? They're already living in a different kind of virtual reality. Their headspace is in a different reality. I think it feeds these artificial intelligence or machine learning type models. I know medicine is already doing this to try to have more predictable outcomes when it comes to doctors and their diagnoses. When they see certain type of indicators, the diagnosis and the prescriptions they make need to become more and more consistent over time. So they're not making one decision when they're fresh and paying attention versus when they're tired and not paying as much attention. They want to decrease that variability or that variance in their interactions with patients, which have real life, you know, consequences. And they're using the data points that they gather through telemedicine and through electronic health records and all of those historical data points to provide better outcomes for patients. So you can imagine that an AI could be instructing someone with all those visual data inputs.
Right. And think about, you know how if you go online and you want to get support on some website and the first thing you want to do is throw a chatbot at you because they figure, hey, it can answer, our little AI can answer a number of the common questions. And sometimes it's amazingly great. On what you said, imagine you're dialing up some mechanical services and it recognizes, like you were talking about, oh, you're trying to change the oil filter in this car. And of course, on new cars, it's so highly obnoxious to do anything. They pretty much want you to go do the service center. But anyway, it would recognize you looking, oh, I know the make and model of that. And then it would point down and say, all right, this is the size wrench you need, and you need to do this, and you need to do that.
That's right.
And think about wandering around some park in the metaverse and not knowing if what you're talking to is a bot or a real person. Right
now, I mean, now we're getting into forensics, right?
That's interesting. Was I really just talking to someone?
Yeah, and that's the Turing test, right? The Turing test is whether or not a human can actually distinguish between artificial intelligence versus a human. And if you cannot distinguish it, then you've achieved actual artificial intelligence. Right. When you're playing games, they're called NPCs, non-player characters. So I do expect the metaverse is filled with NPCs of that sort where you can't really tell if there's a human controlling it on the other side.
Is there some AI and there's some machine learning that's just evolved over time that allows things like that to happen?
Yeah, the cheaper the storage space, the more digital transformation that happens, the more that we're online and the more that we allow data to be collected, the simulation becomes more and more real for the metaverse. Legal rubric that's built around the metaverse eventually. So where if you're an NPC, it needs to declare themselves as NPCs, like non-human driven or whatever. and where humans are identified as humans, maybe. But what about nefarious actors and hackers and that want to steal the characteristics of your avatar? That's already a simulated version of yourself. So much easier since you don't have to make it look lifelike like in videos.
Correct. You don't have to match it exactly. So
you just got to steal the avatar, you know, make it
dress. That's interesting.
But now
what does that leave behind? You know, I mean, there's so many different things that are on the service, obviously. Let's do a forensic copy if we can, logical file copy, see what users are doing. But there's so many shaded areas in here, right? Just like what you're talking about, that will eventually need some type of investigative tools to try to see what was going to actually happen.
Hopefully there's sufficient information there to do some kind of triangulation, some chronological analysis and all that good stuff. But it hasn't been forensic for a while since things have been moved to the cloud. So if we're at the mercy of these providers or these hosts to give us the access that we need, they might design access through the metaverse. We might, as investigators, go in there with our avatars to collect data.
Interesting.
So this is where it's funny, where we made fun of those old movies. We talked about this, old movies where they would strap on goggles, strap on gloves, and in order to collect the file or steal the files that you want, you'd walk up to a file cabinet.
A virtual
file cabinet. Open it and pulled out the folders that you want, collect the data, copy it onto USB or whatever. That might end up being true. That might end up being the interface. It's just funny, all of that fantasy representation of digital forensics might end up being reality.
It might actually be there.
The way to pull the files, because hey, this is how we've designed the interface. You're going to interface with pulling the data in the virtual world too. And we're going to need to figure out either they're going to need to provide us with some kind of interface to get that data. It could be virtual or some kind of backend export. It's hard for me to believe that we'll still be operating within web browsers in the metaverse. I think that's going to be something that is archaic as time goes on.
Yeah, and the question is, will they? If you think about the resistance and the blocks you're running into trying to do an investigation for someone, whether it's Facebook or LinkedIn, or the attorneys go and they try to get some information or get access to it, they're usually shut down. It's not, you pretty much figure, hey, you're not going to get anything going down that road. What can we get with what's accessible? And we've talked about, I started researching what's available, and we picked that first device. We decided, let's go with the Oculus Quest because so many people use that. And it is an Android device at the heart of it. It's running Android OS.
Yeah.
And so I began the process of learning how to make forensic copies of the contents of an Oculus headset so we could start establishing some baselines. What can we get from the cloud, from the metaverse, and what people were doing in the metaverse versus the devices? The same challenge we have today. We get somebody's computer, but then we find out they were living in the cloud. Yeah, there's some links and artifacts you might get. But if they deleted stuff, what is going to happen to the forensic examiner of the future, where we spent most of our time imaging drives and recovering data, when all of it's in the cloud and you're not going to get to anything that's been deleted? So I think we'll find the same challenges in the metaverse.
Examiners now to do a lot more triangulation and cross-correlation for sure. So you get what you get off the headset, however long it lives there, and we'll develop best practices on when to get to that, ideally. It's the same thing with phones, right? Things disappear or get synchronized to the cloud and get cleaned up locally. Examiner's going to need to be a lot more skillful at understanding data and where it lives, so more consultative, but a lot more data analytics type skills as well, because you're parsing through logs, you're parsing through structured data that gets extracted as flat files out of these sources. I think there's going to, you know, be an increased demand for data analytics, soft skills, as it were, but also working in teams, because there's just too much ground to cover. I don't think that you'll get, I think it's going to be a lot more effective given all the different data sources and speciality that you'll need. Like even today, we rely on Android specialists or Mac OS specialists. Those seem to be the more unwieldy data sources. And when we're talking about endpoint devices, it's the same way that we're going to want blockchain specialists, AI specialists. Yeah. Oculus specialists.
There could be device, there's just physical investigations. And then there's people who know their way around the different metaverses, because it's not just one. There's all different platforms out there. So there's platform-specific forensics. There's physical device forensics. If you just think of how many different VR headsets there are, Oculus Quest is a great home, share it with the family. But then you have the people that are a lot more serious, and they spend $5,000 on a computer, and they have a whole room set up. And they're running a Vive, you know, headset off of a PC, right? So investigating that environment is going to be different than investigating a Quest that was acquired for whatever reason. And it just keeps expanding. Every other day, I hear about another AR glasses menu for somebody trying to get in the space. So everywhere you turn, potentially artifacts and stuff like that.
I think to the metaverse, if it's going to simulate reality, then you're going to have a method for exchange, remuneration, you know, paychecks and spending and retail and all of that stuff. And I think it's a lot different than the kind of built-in pay for virtual items type of things within games. I think it's going to simulate a much more of real life banking and ultimately earning a living in that space if it's going to be anything that the metaverse promises.
And just think about all the different cryptocurrencies, right? And that's pretty much, like you said, how people are going to be paying for things in the metaverse. And there's 5 new cryptos a day that come out. It's imagine being a forensic accountant that specializes in cryptocurrencies.
It's going to happen. Yeah, it's already,
interesting stuff. But I do want to hear I think you do a great job explaining Web3 and just how the metaverse and the way we're interacting, that underlying technology. I think that's something that's definitely have you talk about, but I think that's very relevant to the metaverse is what's the tech behind how it's coming to us.
That's right. Yeah. And there's a huge debate on whether or not the promise of blockchain and crypto is going to be decentralized and democratized. What we're seeing with Web3 companies that are dominating the space nowadays is that there's very few of them that are making the lion's share of the profit. So it's not being distributed across different players because it's complicated. And I think that the ones that are really savvy at creating simplified, user-friendly on-ramps to blockchain and cryptocurrency are the ones reaping the rewards. Right. So it's MetaMask, it's Coinbase, it's Binance, it's crypto.com. It's all those privately owned companies that are developing, not entirely on the blockchain, by the way. They're just creating their own cloud apps. Like the OpenSea, the NFT exchange is just all in the cloud. Very little of it is actually recorded on blockchain, but they provide easy on-ramps, right? They convert fiat currency to crypto conveniently. Like you don't have to mine you have your own mining machine in order to generate Bitcoin or Ethereum. So I think for the masses, that's where they dominate. And that's where kind of the Web2 influence is going to leak into the Web3. Yeah, space. I think it's going to continue to be dominated by private companies because not all of their transactions are going to be recorded on the blockchain. It's just the blockchain isn't really designed or amenable to that. Like I said, combining it with cloud and traditional data warehouses, and those are all not transparent, not readily audited. And that's where it defeats the theory behind or the promise behind blockchain and decentralization. So that's my prediction. Not that it's necessarily a good or a bad thing. I'm just reading the tea leaves and where that goes. And we could dig into that more in a future episode. Suffice it to say, it is a core component of metaverse because it needs an economy and it needs a currency in order for folks to thrive and exist and live within that space. Those are some of the topics that we'll dive into. It's not just technical, but we will confront ethical dilemmas in the metaverse. And I'm sure that legal topics will come up. And I imagine we'll have some metaverse on our show too, John.
Yeah, I've seen more and more of those pop up in feeds like through LinkedIn and other research that I've done. More and more people, you know, just setting up their territory, their signposts, because I think everybody expects that this is going to be a pretty big wave, and we see opportunities to learn, to teach, and just to take, be a part of that growth, be a part of the next opportunity.
That's right. And I think that's what's behind the definition of Web3, if it's confusing to anyone. It's the third major evolution of the internet, includes virtual reality or extended reality, crypto, AI.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on your podcast and invite me to discuss these topics. I think we have a lot to explore and I'm going to enjoy it, and hopefully other people will.
And thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you next time.
All right. Thanks, Sherry. Thanks, everybody. Hopefully that'll be quite a few out there. So take care, guys. Talk to you later. Care.